This is an interview with Mr. Robert Farrow for the Ohio Historical Society and Youngstown State University's Industrial History Project by Janice Cafaro at 3642 Stars Center in Youngstown, Ohio on August 24th, 1986 at 2 p.m. Okay, Mr. Farrow, could you tell us a little bit about your background, where you were raised, went to school, what it was like growing up?
Well, basically, I went to school at Jackson School in Brownlee Woods. Used to walk to school. There was no transportation or anything like that, so it was about a half a mile to a mile walk. Came home for lunch, then walked back to school. After Jackson School, I went to Woodrow Wilson High School. And basically, I would say childhood was pretty ordinary. Nothing exceptional. My parents were of Italian descent. My father came over from Italy. My mom was born here. And my dad could not read or write the English language. My mother could. They always emphasized education, 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 to get a good education and go on. So basically, I did not participate in any sports in school. I started working probably when I was 9 years old with a paper route, and after the paper route when I was 16, I was a grocery clerk, and I was a grocery clerk until I started college. So basically that's the background for the younger years.
Why did your father choose Youngstown to settle in?
Basically because a relative was here. He had come over to this country, and there was a relative in Washingtonville, Pennsylvania, and he went over there and he was working, and then he was working in a tin mill, and the tin mill closed down, and his cousin was living in Youngstown, so he came over to Youngstown and got a job, I believe, at the General Fireproofing Company. And from the General Fireproofing Company, he went to work for Republic Rubber Company,
okay,
from which he retired.
Okay. Why did you choose accounting as a profession?
Basically, I was going to go into some type of a scientific type of field, and for some reason I switched, and I just took a bookkeeping course in high school, and I had a teacher that I really enjoyed, and he really stimulated me, and I really loved it. I hit something that I really liked, and that's why I chose accounting.
Okay. What was your first job as an accountant?
My first job as an accountant was for the Swan Rubber Company in Bucyrus, Ohio. That was, I was basically in the cost department, figuring out the cost of rubber products as far as material and labor costs.
Was during the late 1950s or 60s?
I was 1959.
Okay. And then where did you go from then, and why did you leave?
Okay, I left because I didn't particularly enjoy doing cost accounting, and I didn't enjoy being away from home and so forth. So I found a job at Reese Hardware and Supply in Warren, Ohio, and I received a job as an office manager there, and I was responsible for all of the accounting functions of the company. It was a small company with about 20 employees.
Okay. From there, did you get into teaching next?
No, I got into the Army next.
Uh-huh.
There was a period of time there when, during the Berlin War crisis, they were drafting a lot of people, and I got my draft notice, so I joined the National Guard. And so I went into the service for 6 months. And then after I served the 6 months in the Army Reserves, it was, or the National Guard. But after I served the 6 months there, I came back to Warren and worked there just for a couple of months. And then I got a job as a field auditor for B.F. Goodrich Company.
Okay. And when was this?
Okay, this was 1961. Then from there, I again came back to town because I had met my future wife. I was going to get married, and the job I had with B.F. Goodrich was as a traveling field auditor, and I didn't want to be on the road all the time and try to be married at the same time. So I was able to find a job with a small public accountant in Youngstown, and I worked for him for 2 years. Then, after that particular period of time, I tried to go on my own, and I was on my own for about 6 months, and I just couldn't hack it. So after that, I found a job with Youngstown Sheet and Tube in their management training program, of which I worked there for 2 years. At the same time I was working there, I was working on my master's at Case Western Reserve. And once I got my master's, I was offered a job at Youngstown State as a teacher, and I took that particular job, which would have been 1965, I believe.
Okay. From your experience as a sheet tube, was there any indication the company was in financial trouble?
At that particular time, there was no indication from what I saw that the company was in trouble.
No, they should have still been doing well at that time.
Yes, but what I did see was the fact that their operating practices, to me, seemed to be rather poor from the standpoint that it took 10 men to do a job that I would think five could have done at that time. Again, I'd been used to working for smaller corporations and companies, and I wasn't used to that many people working in a company and it taking so many people to do a job. Mm-hmm. So that was really my only indication that they could have gotten into trouble. Also during that particular time, I worked in an accounting department part of the time, and they never replaced any equipment. The type of calculators we used were the old Marchand calculators. And some of the people even used a hand calculator that was about 1920. You wouldn't believe what it was. It was a little hand job that you'd move along with the digits and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I felt that, you know, just as a generalized opinion, it just didn't seem like they were a forward-looking corporation at that particular time.
And you'd also say perhaps there was somewhat of an inefficiency problem.
Probably. I don't think it was any different from any other large corporation, but there did seem to be a great deal of inefficiency. And I would say that was probably one of the downfalls of the steel industry in general, that there was a great deal of inefficiency.
And lack of modernization.
Right.
Do you have any reason why there was no update in the office equipment during that time?
No, I really wasn't high enough to be involved in those type of decisions.
Okay. Basically, what are you dealing with when you were in the accounting department at Sheet and Tube?
I was really in a training
program, yeah.
And all I did was go around from department to department and just observe and study and write up what the particular department did. I'd gotten my master's degree during that particular time, and I asked them if they had any particular place for me, and they didn't. I really felt that maybe I had too much education for the particular area that I was in. Mm-hmm. So that's how the teaching came about. Again, I'd been teaching part-time in previous years at the university, so I was already involved there somewhat, and I was able to get a full-time position from that.
Oh, okay. So, then how long did you teach full-time at the university?
Full-time, I taught from 1965 through 1970.
Okay, what were the students talking about? Was there talk of staying in the area for their job, or was there more relocation? Were there companies to absorb accountants, or were they more interested in private practices?
At that particular time, it was very difficult to tell because of the fact that many of the students were there just to avoid the draft.
Okay.
It was during the late 60s, and many of the people just really weren't too interested in college. They were there for a reason, but it wasn't an educational reason.
Uh-huh.
As far as the ones that were serious, I would say that most of them would have loved to just stay in the area. they would have liked to have gotten their degree at Youngstown State and then stay in the area, work in the area, either in private industry or in public accounting, depends upon the particular student. Many of the students that I've had are now placed in organizations around town, mostly public accounting, and I still run into them once in a while. But I would say the majority of them have left the area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They've gone as the economy has gone then.
Yes, I would think so. Mm-hmm. But again, even when I went to school at Youngstown State, you know, the idea was always to try to get a job here, but if you couldn't, you left the area.
Okay.
So I don't think it's really anything new. There has been various periods of time around here that the students just haven't been able to find work here, so they've left. I know when I got out in 58, it was pretty much the same way. There was a lull in the steel industry at that time and
right.
the general economy. And so it was very difficult to get a job when I got out in 58. And with anybody that hadn't had any military service, it was almost impossible to find a job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you were... you finished teaching by the late 60s, early 70s?
1971, I believe, was my last year of teaching. And the reason I left teaching was I was building on my practice at the time I was teaching. And once it got to a point where it could economically support me, then I went on my own.
Okay. During this period of time, late 60s, early 70s, how large was your practice?
Basically, you mean volume-wise, or number of clients, or number of people? Basically, it was myself and my secretary.
Mm-hmm.
We probably had about 25, 30 accounts. And volume-wise, when I started out, I was doing a gross of $28,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Or, the clients varied, or was there particular industries from which you had more clients from?
Well, when I first started out, I had less clients, and I was doing more work for them, and most of them were in construction work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some very large contractors when I first started out. Most of them have fallen by the wayside at this particular point in time. As far as the building industry, the history that I've seen is it's been an up and down type of thing going along with the economy. When I got out of teaching into the practice, it was an up period. It probably died in 73, 74, 75. Then it started back up again, and then it died again in the early 80s. And I think about now, it seems to be in the last year in this valley that it's back up again. Residential is still a little light as far as number of units being produced, but we're losing this idea of having large developments with a lot of houses being built. It's more spot housing where one house is built in this neighborhood, another one in another neighborhood, and you're not getting the big plat developments anymore. Part of the reason, too, is we're running out of land around here. Youngstown proper, there has been almost no residential building. Commercial building is in the area of government work, hospital work, and remodeling work. But residential, outside of some remodeling work, there's been probably one or two houses built in the last 4 or 5 years in city of Youngstown proper. The outlying areas are doing much better than that, hopefully. Apartment building right now, there are very little in the way of apartments being built right now. And again, it's due to the money situation, the lack of demand for rental apartments and so forth. So condominiums are very popular right now. I probably have 3 or 4 clients right now that are involved in building of condominiums.
Okay, how about the commercialization of Boardman and a subsequent builder, both commercially and residentially? This has happened within past 20 years?
I would say it's probably the last 20 years, and it's just been a constant thing. It started with the Boardman Plaza and worked its way up from there. Again, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen the large commercialization of Route 224, where mm-hmm. you've got every fast food restaurant and almost every type of retail establishment. It's been a growing situation here in Boardman. It's been a growing situation in Liberty. It's been a growing situation in Austintown. These are the communities that have promoted the building. Canfield has not promoted too much building. Poland has not promoted too much building. And it's very difficult to build anything in Canfield, per se. Canfield Township, something different, but the city of Canfield, there are an awful lot of restrictions that restrict building in that particular area.
So it seems that despite the some of the economy which has continually gone down past 10 years, there is economic prosperity within the suburbs.
Yes, I would say so. One thing I've noticed just within the last couple of weeks, there's a great deal of help wanted signs around. If you go to the mall right now, there's signs in the windows asking for stock clerks and sales clerks and so forth. Again, these are lower paying jobs. You're seeing where a lot of the jobs have gone from a high paying manufacturing type job to a lower paying service type job.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is one thing that's being affected. And yet there's still a lot of people involved in the medical end, the insurance end, the finance end. These type of jobs are a little bit better paying than the retail type of job. So surprisingly, I think our economy has held up very well in that area.
During the 70s and even today, I know that were there a lot of small contractors or several large ones which dominated the Youngstown contracting industry? With your accounts?
I haven't particularly dealt with them, but again, as you know, there's probably two very large contractors that are nationwide in our area, DiBartolo and Cafaro. There's a lot of local or regional type contractors, and there used to be more residential home builders where a man might go out and build 8 or 10 houses a year. This is the market that's really dropped off, where you had people that would build 8 or 10 houses a year. Now they build 2 or 3 houses a year. It's a big year. There's still a lot of subcontractors around as far as plumbing, heating, drywall, plastering, acoustical, electrical. So there still is a lot of that work around. What some of the contractors have had to do is maybe spread out a little bit on their area. I've had clients that have done work in Cleveland and Pennsylvania where previously they wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But they've done that just to spread out their market because the demand wasn't here.
Okay. Then you would just say basically a decreasing demand for homes and in that industry has been in the area.
It's been the fact that you've got your young people moving out, a large number of them.
Sure.
Plus, we've had that high interest rate there for a few years where the interest rate was 14, 15, 16% as far as residential mortgages, and no one could afford a home mm-hmm. at those rates. But now that the rates are coming back down, people are interested again. I've got one client building a house that he's able to advertise under $40,000. It's a new house. Again, it's not a big house, it's a basementless house, but it's a new house.
Mm-hmm.
So the prices have not gone up in this particular area. In fact, that's one of the bargains of living in this area, that housing costs are much more reasonable
right.
than other areas.
One of the lowest in the country.
Yes.
And how is your business, how did your business start to grow once you started, once you were established, you're making about $20,000 a year, and then you said you had a lot of home construction, home builders. Did you stick with there, or did you start branching out, getting different diversification during the 70s?
I would say it was mostly diversification. In fact, to the point today where we're handling a lot more accounts. We're probably handling about 125 accounts now, but they're smaller accounts. We don't have as many larger accounts as we used to have, so we now have to handle a lot of smaller ones. And this is one thing that we're seeing in this particular area, that there are so many people starting their own businesses. In the last 3 months, we've picked up 11 new clients, and they're all of the type of somebody either has lost their job, they're retired, they've decided they don't want to work for somebody else, and they're all starting their own businesses. Most of them are service-oriented business or sales-type businesses. None of them are manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturing, in my particular practice, I probably only have 3 manufacturers. Everybody else is a service or a retail type of business or construction business. This is an area that I think the area is kind of weak on, is attracting manufacturers, although we are starting to see more and more of the small plants employing 10, 15, 20 people coming.
Sure. So then you would say that we become more service-oriented in the economy then?
Yes.
With the small businessman taking the lead in it?
I would say so. I don't think the small businessman has really made this any type of a project. It's just a matter of survival and doing something.
Mm-hmm.
The man that's wants to look to the future is starting to say, hey, I can't depend upon the big organization anymore. I can't go into the steel mill and work the rest of my life, or I can't go into the auto plant and work the rest of my life. So what can I do that I can build it myself and at least provide my own type of security?
Okay. What are the sizes of these businesses? Are they more of a home type business, or are they more of a, you know, like you said, retail type business?
I would say most of them are of a home type business where they're not really employing many employees. It's either themselves or one or two other employees.
Mm-hmm.
You are getting involved in some retail businesses where maybe they have 5 or 6 employees. But generally speaking, no one's coming in and saying, I'm going to go out and hire 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at some point in time they may have that many employees, but you're not seeing that type of program happen.
Okay. And are many of your clients now of the small business type?
I would say all of them are, because the largest one that I have does approximately $8 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
In sales. So all of my clients are of the small business type. Again, being a small firm myself, there's no way I can really service a larger organization.
Okay. Have you gone out and actively sought out small business?
I would say to a certain extent it's through the contacts that I've had, through talking with people, previous clients, our own reputation that we've built up, referrals.
Mm-hmm.
We've been getting all of those type of things, and surprisingly, a lot of it's just a matter of somebody calling on the phone and saying, hey, I'm going into business, Bob. Can you help me out? Somebody recommended you to me. This,
mm-hmm.
this is basically where we're getting a great majority of our new business, in spite of the fact that they say referrals aren't a good source anymore. You can't depend upon referrals. But once you get enough people out there in the marketplace talking for you, that's your best and most expensive source of new business.
Mm-hmm.
In a service industry, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some of the problems that small businesses are having in this area?
Part of the problem is their lack of knowledge of business. they have the attitude that they can go to the bank and borrow money to get started, and very difficult for a new business to get money from a bank. They have a lack of knowledge of sources of where to get money, and it's just a growing process that they have to come up with.
Okay. Have many of your clients relocated in the past 10 years, or have they stayed in the area?
I would say most of them have stayed in the area. Some of them have gone out of business, but although a few of them have gone to Florida and they're doing work in Florida, one home builder went to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. As a general rule, though, most of the people have, I would say, stayed in this area if they could. Mm-hmm. People like this area. They want to stay here. Mm-hmm. We've just got to be able to provide work for them. That's the whole key.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they've still managed to survive in this fight. Oh, the general slowdown.
Yes. I would say there's been jobs available through most of the slowdown. The problem is somebody that's used to working for $10 an hour doesn't want to work for $4 an hour, and I don't blame him because he's established that standard of living. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. And how has your practice grown over the years?
We've probably enjoyed, as a general rule, a 10% growth each year. Hmm. Now this year we're projecting a little larger growth than that, only because of the addition of my son as my partner, and the fact that there's two of us now in administration, that we have to work a little harder. We have to take an interest in trying to grow a little more. Than when I worked by myself, I didn't have that need.
Mm-hmm.
So
what have you done? What sort of adjustments have you made then?
Okay, we came out with a company brochure. That was one thing. We're doing mailings to all new businesses that are incorporating or obtained a vendor's license. We're talking more to people. We're doing a little bit of advertising in the charitable type magazines and in the Home Builders magazine and things of that type. But again, it's been more of a talking situation where we're telling people that we're able to accept more business now.
Okay, you started off with approximately $28,000 volume. Mm-hmm. What would be your volume now then? Over, since we're saying 16, 17 years.
Well, I really wouldn't want to put that into a public record, that
okay.
particular thing.
But you have grown about 10% each
yeah,
year.
Yeah, at least.
And it's been steady.
Not always. There's been a couple of years that it evened out or dropped slightly.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say as a general rule, what you run into in an accounting practice is you have your biggest growth at the beginning times, and then when you do something in your accounting practice, it stabilizes, such as if you make a move to a new location,
yeah.
you buy a new computer, you add another person. Generally, instead of getting a growth situation, you get a little bit of a stagnant situation, and then you get the growth again.
Okay.
But there was one particular period of time where, for example, I was doing 27 fast food restaurants, and they went out of business.
Oh.
So that affected my
sure.
practice. But again, I recovered from that in about a year. I had one client that was providing me with probably one-third of my income at one point in time. They went bankrupt, and it took me about a year to recover from that. But generally speaking, it's been growth all the way. Not rapid growth, because again, I've been working by myself for many years. I've tried to keep the lid on growth because there was only a certain amount of work I could handle.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really push it. But now, as I'm saying, I am pushing a little harder.
Okay. And how have you modernized?
How have we modernized? Well, We've been in computers since 1970. We're on our third computer. Other than that, I'd say we haven't modernized a whole lot more outside of just updating our typewriters, adding machines and so forth, because we're not in a situation where we're using a lot of heavy equipment, copying machines, you update and so forth. But mainly it's been the area of the computers in our practice that we have updated probably every 5 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you felt it necessary to get into computers a long time ago. Why? Was it because of your volume, the more efficiency, or?
We were able to just do more with a small practice by having the computer. We do a lot of client write-up work and financial statements. And when we first started out in 70, we got our first computer, which was a Litton 1231, and we were able to do that type of work for our clients. And that's been a strong point in our practice.
Okay. Did you have any final observations that you've made about that you've noticed you're working with small businesses or the Home Build Association, how it's changed over the years, or what it has to do to survive?
Well, one of the big problems in our area is attitude, and I think we have to change our attitude and realize that we do live in a good area. There are good people here, and we can make it here. It's just a matter of each individual businessman has to work a little harder and put a little more effort into it, into his work. Problems that they do encounter is, again, we're in rapid technological change, and you have to watch yourself that you're not building a product that's obsolete, or offering a service that's obsolete. And I think this is one of the things the businessmen of today have to watch out for. Things are changing a little bit faster than they changed back in the old days. So that's one observation. And I think they have to watch their costs. What I find with most small businessmen is they don't realize how much things cost as far as rent, insurance, wages, payroll taxes, employee benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they have to be very careful in those particular areas. And they have to price their product properly. A lot of small businessmen, when they first start out, they don't put a high enough price on their product. And I've had several of them that I've worked with trying to get them to increase their price, but they wouldn't do it. And they never made it because of that.
Was there a fear that it would no longer be marketable if it was raised?
Not necessarily. Some of them were in retail businesses that, well, to throw out one example, a grocery store that tried to operate like a large supermarket chain instead of like a convenience store. And they just couldn't compete in that market because they weren't big enough. They couldn't buy in big enough volume. So those are the type of things you run into. A lot of businessmen think that the more you sell, the more money you're going to make. And if you want to sell more, you lower your price. But if they can't make an adequate profit on one unit, they can't make it on 100 units either. So.
Right. Unless you're in a mass production.
And that doesn't always work because your costs go up directly, too. Plus, you have to have the financing capability to purchase heavy equipment to do that type of thing, or new technological types of equipment.
Okay. Do you think Young Sal is headed for a comeback?
Yes. I'm very optimistic with Youngstown. I think we have a nice weather climate. We have adequate water. We have a good labor force. We have a good university. We have a good hospital system. We have good shopping areas. We have reasonable housing prices. I think we have all positive things going for us. It's just a matter of attitude. The political situation, I think there's a little bit of too much of political infighting that creates a lot more problems than are necessary. But I'm very positive about Youngstown. They have the basic things here, and it's just a matter of getting away from a part of our bad image from past years. You know, we've always had the image of being a crime town and so forth. I remember back in the 60s when I'd be a field auditor and they'd ask me where I lived, and I said Youngstown, and they'd say, oh, you mean crime town or Little Chicago or something like that. And some of that attitude still lives around the country. And you know, even though we've had no major crime problems over the last few years, the attitude's still out there. And again, I think we have to overcome the high cost of labor image that our valley has, too. That's another reason why I don't think we're doing as well as we could. But I think we have more positives than negatives.
Mm-hmm. You think that the union heritage is an unattractive feature for perhaps big industry to relocate?
It is to a point, and yet that has been one of the benefits of our high standard of living around here, the fact that a man with very little training or education could go out and earn as much money as he did. He was able to buy a nice house and, you know, spend the money in the community. Mm-hmm. But yes, that is a problem, that, you know, people can go down to Columbus, Ohio, and their labor rate's $3 or $4 an hour less than Youngstown, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a choice to relocate, where would you pick?
Right.
So that is a problem. And I think our union people have to recognize that fact. Again, why should they want to give up anything that they already have? It's very difficult to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to do it. But that's one of the things that's going to have to be done to attract the heavy manufacturing businesses here.
What would you think would be the key to come back? Do you think it would be diversification of business, or do you see more of a large business orientation?
I think it's going to be a diversification. I don't think we're going to see any more steel industries in the valley or General Motors plants. I think it's just going to be a matter of, well, for example, I saw in the newspaper yesterday, Weatherby Coats is reopening, and, you know, they've gone from 15 employees to a potential 130 employees. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the type of industry that will build the valley up again. We're going to need a lot of those 130 employee plants around here. Those are easier to handle, they're easier to attract, they're easier to finance, and that's going to be the key. And we have to provide our young people with places to work.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And perhaps even a repackaging of Youngstown's image.
Yes, and I think that's starting to happen. I think the Chamber of Commerce is doing a good job in that area now, and the businessmen are more positive now. And again, it goes back to attitude. If we can get our attitude to a positive situation.
Why more positive?
Well, I think people aren't experiencing the hard times that they did for a while there.
Okay.
I think everybody that survived are the survivors. All the rest have dropped by the wayside as far as business is concerned. I think the businessman is a little smarter today and a little more cautious today because of some of the things that have happened.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, Janice, thank you.